session number 30,001, Mr. Peter Est, Reel 8. Now, there was developing a fair amount of press and sort of just general interest in 73 Scrubbin at this point, wasn't it?
Yes.
You know, in early 1940 spring.
Yes.
That sort of time. Yes. Tell us a bit about it. Well, how did you notice this interest?
Well, the weather started to improve. The snow started to melt and disappear. And we used to get an awful lot of visitors from the UK, and there was a from various parts, but they always used to make for our squadron, because our squadron on the fighter side had more activity than any of the others. And we had air rank, officers of air rank coming who were visiting in the UK. They always used to come out to us. And civilian dignitaries.
Do you remember anyone in particular?
Well, I do remember one day that the Duke of Windsor arrived, but he didn't come down to the airfield. I'd been flying early one morning. This was in the spring of 1940. And I'd gone to the officers' mess to get a late breakfast, because I hadn't had breakfast before I went off. And I was the only officer in the mess, together with the staff. We had a corporal and two airmen getting the place straight. And a vehicle pulled up outside, and one of the airmen, he said, "There's a big vehicle here. It looks pretty, a pretty important sort of a vehicle. I don't know who's in it." And then after about two or three minutes, they said, "Good heavens, it's the Duke of Windsor." And he was coming into making for our mess. Well, I was the only officer there, and I sort of had to try and do the right thing and entertain him and talk to him. And I said to the chaps, I said, "You better go and tell the CO the Duke of Windsor's here." So I think he was still in bed. So it took him some while to get there, by which time I'd been talking to Duke of Windsor for quite a long time, and offered him, I said, "Would you like any coffee?" So he said, "No." I said, "Would you like a drink?" He said, "You've got a drop of cognac?" I said, "Yes, yes, we have." So I said, "So just prepare a cognac." And so the Duke had a drop of cognac. And I was talking to him, trying to do the right thing. He's quite easy to talk to.
What was he like? I mean, to you, I mean, you must have been a bit dumbfounded by all this.
I was, because I had no idea he was coming. And he was on his way for somewhere and decided, he'd been told, I suppose, that we were there, and decided to call in on us.
Do you remember what you talked about? Or just about operations? Or
yes, he wanted to know what we were doing and so on. And then the CO turned up and he took over. So I fell into the background.
Any other VIPs? You know, I mean, did the Prime Minister, Chamberlain come out or any of the others?
We used to get quite a few officers of air rank out from the UK because they wanted to see what things were doing, so that they could...
Anybody in particular? Any of the famous ones? Dowding, that lot? Not that you remember.
No, I can't remember.
What about the press side of it? Because
The press. Oh, they were always with us. There was a chap named Glorious Devon. His name was Devon, but he was always known as Glorious Devon. He was a marvellous photographer, and he used to work for the Daily Mirror. Then there was...
Now, he took a photograph of you that's quite well known, didn't he?
Yes.
Was that at this point or later on? Is one of you getting out of an aircraft or getting into it?
Yeah, I can't... He took a lot of photographs, and he used to come to see us a lot. I can't remember at which stage these various photos were taken.
But it was while you were in France, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
Because that photograph was used in an RAF recruiting thing.
That's right.
And
that's
I recognised it when I saw it as well. So
yes, that's the one. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Was it posed?
No.
You were just getting
out? Well, no. Partially perished, yes. I was getting out of the aircraft, and then they said, hold it, we want to take your photograph. And so it was partially perished.
Because so, you're sort of sat.
That's the one, just, that's the one, yes.
Yeah, you can see it's part, yeah. So you were just getting out and...
Yes.
Right. Now, so what else? Were you interviewed by anyone?
Oh, there's a lot of the chap named Noel Monks of the Daily Mail. He was always wanting to come to our squadron. And in fact, he wrote a book about it called Squadrons Up.
Now, do you think these journalists... One of the things that people have said is that journalists misrepresent things, write things up in a more dramatic and exaggerated manner, and make up personalities.
They did a bit.
Did you find any of that? I mean, if that's not how it was, then
it was to a degree. It was like that because he was obviously wanting to sell his book and trying to make it as entertaining as possible, I suppose. But yes, it was a little bit of that, isn't it?
Was it very exaggerated? I mean, what degree of exaggeration did you find in press reports or books? You know,
not too much. There was another chap. He was with the BBC. I've got his book upstairs. Can't remember the name of it now. But he was a little more accurate than Monks. Bit of a bullshitter, I suppose you could say.
What sort? Can you remember any examples of things he'd exaggerate? What type of thing would he do?
No, I can't remember without getting the book.
So it was just a general over impression that he was a bullshitter, whereas some of the others weren't.
Yes, yes. I've got photographs of a number of them.
Now, any other? I mean, you run into a series of fights running from 6th to 7th of April in that period, and you get your first.
Yes.
Confirmed killer. We'll go on to that. But anything before that that you remember, or was it just really...
Well, we continued flying these patrols.
Anything happening?
And the activity from the German side was increasing.
Now, what type of activity?
Just measurement 109s. Looking up, coming to look to us, and then we occasionally get mixed up in a dogfight.
Do you remember any of them in particular?
Yes, one or two. You know, sometimes they just come and they might just flash across us and then fly back again. Sometimes they wouldn't attack too much. They would just let us know that they were there.
And then, what's the next thing that happened? Would it? You seem to have the 6th of April... You chased a Dornier 17, and you claim to have damaged it.
Yes. That one? Yes.
What do you remember? Tell us the story. I am very conscious that this is, 70-odd years ago, and
yes.
It's not very easy to just suddenly to land on something like this. Well, do you remember anything about that day?
I think these Dornier 17s were mainly used in the reconnaissance role. I don't remember any of them dropping bombs at that stage.
So where did you find this Dornier? On the 6th of April.
He was flying across the border, and I suppose he thought he could get through without being seen. And if there was any cloud about, and of course they have a good chance of getting back unharmed. Because we had no radar, nothing like that. So if they came above cloud, we wouldn't see them anyway. On the other hand, what they couldn't see the ground if they were above 10 clouds. So what they used to do was to drop through the cloud, take the photographs of whatever they were aiming for, then pull back up into the cloud again. And go above the clouds, so it was difficult to chase them unless you're right on their tails. You couldn't.
So on this, on the 6th, you must have been lucky that day. You
yes,
saw one.
Yes, and Redemption ship. There were two of us on it.
So you could see it was damaged.
Oh yes.
But it
yes,
flew on.
Yes. But
I'll come to. There's a good point that you make yourself about not overclaiming, but why you can't always tell what happens to an aircraft, which I think is quite important. But we'll come to that later. So the next day, the 7th of April, there's another incident where there's an offensive patrol of six aircraft at 23,000 feet, where you meet six 109s.
Yes.
Now, what do you remember about that? Was that an actual dogfight? It seems to be a long-range encounter.
Yes, that was a bit of a dogfight. And, of course, they don't last long, these dogfights. People get out of range, had to dive down perhaps to escape the fire and then pull back up again, and by that time perhaps the Germans had done the same thing and they'd buggered off home. So that, although you had aircraft meeting each other, sometimes the period of combat was quite short.
So a matter of seconds?
Yes, not many. Yes.
Now, when you were in a patrol of six, would you be in two VICs of three?
Yes. Yeah.
And you've got one damage since confirmed.
Yes.
Now, what was the process of that?
Well, I knew I'd hit him, but I didn't see him go down. But he crash landed in France, and the news got through from the French authorities that he'd crashed. But I didn't see him crash. I knew I'd hit him. And so that was how it was confirmed.
And let's take that. Well, that might be the point. You didn't have time to confirm kills for yourself anyway. Could you just explain a bit about why you couldn't follow people down make sure?
Well,
if you
were following people down, you're probably inviting people to get on your own tail. And secondly, you're taking yourself away from the rest of the squadron, which should remain as far as possible somewhat together.
So you couldn't actually tell what was, it was almost impossible to make a proper claim, confirmed claim.
Now that's why I initially didn't make a proper claim. I claim one was damaged. And then it was only when the French reported this aircraft that I knew exactly, it was exactly where I shot him down.
Was it officially given to you?
I mean, yes.
So that was your first?
First 109, yeah.
Now, yes, what about the next one, same day, what you shot one down, crashed near Boulay. What do you remember of that?
Yes, well...
So that would be two in a day?
Yes. Well, that one, I actually saw crash, because Boulay was not too far from where we were. So, and the other aircraft had gone back, and so I actually saw that one crash.
Now, how exactly did you get in the position to shoot him down? You see, in other words, what had you done right, and by definition, what had he done wrong? Can you explain how you approached each other?
Well, they came over to attack us. And I was flying as a wingman, and being a wingman, I was subject to more attacks than the leader, say. So I swung round when he was firing at me. I swung round because we could turn them inside a 109, and I was able to get onto his tail. Fortunately, not too far away, and had my gun sight on, and got him with some and saw him crash myself.
What was that like? I mean, what sort of feelings did you have? Because people have talked of different feelings, but...
No, I think, it's all good. Got the bastards, call them all bastards.
So there's no feeling. Did you see it as a man or a plane? Because some people have said there's a different... they see it as a...
Now, basically... It's the plane I want to see go down. If the man is able to bail out and get away with it, well, good luck to him. But sometimes, because they weren't able to get out, they might have been injured or whatever. So you just don't know.
And did this one get out of them?
No.
Not that you saw.
No.
So that was quite a successful day. I mean, would there be a celebration if you'd got well, one subsequently confirmed and one you could confirm yourself?
Yes. Well, that was a good day. So there weren't many days like that.
Was that your first two? In the book it is, but you seem to be...
Yes. I'm just trying to think if we had the... because I had the do in November, and then we had the bad weather.
But then the do in November, you didn't shoot them down, did you?
No.
No, right. So, I mean, in the book it says it's the first.
Yes, yes, yeah.
We have to check.
That's right, because we had all that bad weather which lasted for so long, but best part of 3 months, really. Terrible winter.
Now, so did you have a celebration in the mess, that, you know?
Oh, I had an odd drink. I can't remember having a massive celebration. If someone got one, we usually had a quick drink, but we didn't necessarily get over the top.
We've talked quite a bit about drinking on sort of big nights when you go out, and also on leave.
Yes.
What about normal drinking habits in the mess? Because taken for granted if you were on a dawn patrol or a morning patrol, you wouldn't drink that much?
Yeah.
So how much would you drink, and what would you
do? Oh, we always used to drink beer. Unless it was a real party evening, then we'd have a few drops of scotch or something or other. But for normal, just casual drink, might have a couple of halves of beer. I didn't drink much.
So this is really, as opposed to when you're sort of having a real drink up, this is very much moderate drinking.
Yes, oh yes, yes.
Operationally.
Yes. You see, most of the big parties were when we went off to Paris or Rennes, were well away where we were. It was impossible to call us back for flying. They were the days when we used to have good parties. But when we were at the squadron, we had one or two lively evenings, but by and large, especially if the weather was fine, and we used to know who was going to be on first flight in the morning, because we used to take it in turns. It was A flight or B flight, whichever.
Now, there's a temporary move just after this, on the 11th of April, back to Rennes.
Yes.
Now, what was that about?
Well, I think they thought the Germans were going to come over and invade France. And I think it was a safety measure, and they sent us off to Rennes. And we were there...
And where were you based there?
We lived in under canvas. I think we were there for about 2 weeks. I'm not sure. Certainly a week, anyway.
Were you still patrolling? And
oh yes, yes, I mean, we were still
working there.
Yes, well, yes, we still flew from there, of course, and carried out patrols. But we had further to go. Towards the border. And I don't know who it was in our headquarters over there who thought that the Germans might be coming across the border and coming in, because we were the RAF airfield, which was most easterly placed. So then eventually we went back to Rouvre again.
This is 8 days, so that's about the 19th. I think you went on the 11th and came back on the 19th.
Oh, that's about it. About 8 days, was it? Yes, I couldn't remember.
And almost immediately, on the 21st, you're in quite another big dogfight with ME-109s and ME-110s.
Oh, yes.
What do you remember of that one? Because that seems to have been a very successful...
Yes, well, the 110s were coming over, and occasionally they would carry a light bomb load, and they used to have the escort of the 109s, and we intercepted them. We got mixed up in them. And
what do you remember of the dogfight that ensued?
I can't remember what I can't remember what I did then.
seem to have shot down an ME-109.
Yes, yes, we got mixed up in the escort, but I can't remember. I think I don't know. I don't know whether I damaged one or shot one down. That
says so shot one down.
Oh, shot one down. Yeah. Yes. So once again, a few of us, and we got mixed up with them, and the Germans, if they were getting involved in aerial combat, they would have a quick go and then they would turn for home. They wouldn't stay, hang around long, which was sensible, really.
Now, but can we just have a little look at what you thought of these various aircraft you were opposing? What did you think of the ME-109? Well, we'll do the
It was a very good aircraft. What they used to do, first of all, if they push the control column forward quickly, they could go into a steep dive. And that, if they had a hurricane on their tail, they knew they could get away from the hurricane every time by doing that. Because with the hurricane, if you did that with the old type carburetors that we had, the engine would cut with the negative G. If you're in a tight turn pulling in, pulling on G, the carburetor was fine. But if you did that, then they had starvation of fuel to the carburetor. And the 109 boys got to know this. And so what they just pushed it, because they had a negative G, anti-negative G control on their carburetors. And in fact, they had a direct fuel system, didn't have a carburetor.
That was one great advantage. Any other advantages or disadvantages in comparison?
Well, then, of course, on turns, we could outturn them. But on speed, both dive and climb, they were faster than that.
A lot faster?
Oh, quite a bit faster, yes.
So noticeably?
Yes, noticeably. I can't tell you by how many miles per hour, but yes, they were.
But if you were chasing them, they'd get away?
Yes.
And if they were chasing you, they'd catch you?
Yes, but then we could outturn them. That's what we used to do. To turn, pull on G, and they couldn't keep with us. So if they wanted to keep with you, and you knew they were trying, you could then outturn them and get on their tail.
So the two sides, that they'd be trying to get you to follow them, and you'd be trying to get them to go into a circle.
Yes.
Both sides would be trying to avoid that.
Yes.
So what about a comparison of armament,
Now, they had a cannon which used to fire through the propeller boss. I can't remember what calibre it was. I think it was about 30 millimetre.
Is this as well as machine guns?
Yes, they had a couple of machine guns also in the fuselage. So all their, or were they just outside the prop? I can't remember now.
It's all right. They can look it up. But
yeah.
Was it better or worse than your armour? I mean, destruction-wise, or was it
much less? In some ways, that cannon that they had, which was firing through, was much heavier armament than we had. So if they hit with that, it did a lot more damage than machine gun fire. It was more difficult to hit with because the trajectory rate was very, very much steeper. It would start to
before the cannon shells would drop earlier in flight.
Yes.
So they wouldn't fly straight for
long. No, they would for a bit, of course. But after about 200 yards or so, they would start to drop.
So you'd have to make the German would have to make a deflection up and down and allow,
Yes, he'd have to pull the nose up a bit. If he wanted, it was outside of that range.
You'd have to hit fire above you.
Yeah. Or aim above us, hoping.
Yes. Which is an additional complication.
Yes, yeah.
Anything else? What about durability? I mean, could both withstand? I mean, the Hurricane had a good reputation for taking punishment, but was that justified?
Yes, the Hurricane could take quite a bit of punishment. It was a sturdy aeroplane, despite the fact that the fuselage rear of the cockpit was a fabric cover. Hurricane really could take quite a lot of punishment before it would really become non-effective.
What about the ME-109? Could they take punishment from what you could see?
Yes, pretty well, because they all their fuselage was all metal, you see.
Now, what about the ME-110?
Really, at its time, it was a good aeroplane. It could fly quite high, it was quite highly powered, and it could be used as a light bomber or as a fighter. So it had guns on board as well. So, but very often they would put a couple of bombs on, and they would come over, and their bombing was not very effective because it was not very accurate. So the type of aiming device they were using for dropping bombs, I don't know what it was, but it was not all that great. But nevertheless, any bombs, you know, can cause alarm on the ground.
And what was it like to attack? I mean, was it vulnerable? So yes. It had to be a fighter bomber. Well, did it make the grade as a fighter,
yeah.
Do you think?
Yes. You see, it couldn't. Hadn't got a very good rate of turn. I mean, look, the 109 had a better rate of turn than the 110. So for us, if you could get behind a 110, because they're a bit faster than us, but if you could get behind one, you stood a fair chance of being able to hit it.
And what about the Dornier that we mentioned? They're the other ones you seem to have met. Dornier 17.
Oh, well, that was a much slower aircraft, because it was it was designed as a bomber.
Were they much more vulnerable to you?
Yes, they were.
If you caught them.
If you caught them.
If you saw them.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about, did they have, I should have asked, did they have a rear gunner? The ME-110, did they have a rear gunner?
No.
The Dornier
did. And
were you aware of it, how to approach it without running into there?
Well, I think with 8 machine guns going at him, he was more frightened of us than we were of him. We only have one gun, you see.
So you tended to not take them into consideration?
Yeah.
The other thing, I thought, did you use tracer? I should have asked when I was asking you about you. You know, we talked about the
harmonization of guns. They did try some tracer, but it was misleading because the trajectory of the tracer was much less, or much, much more, rather, than the ordinary bullet. So the tracer was going down, the others were going on ahead. So, and if you were following your tracer to find you, all the other bullets were being wasted.
So the tracer might be hitting, but your bullets would be going above it,
or the other way around. Yeah, I'm going to have.